Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this special meeting of the Historic Preservation Board. Hope you all are doing well in the pandemic and everything is okay with you and your families. Debbie will start off the meeting this morning, and Debbie and Nick.
Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Mr. Chair. I just had a brief general announcements. Thanks, Debbie. Today's virtual meeting of the Historic Preservation Board has been scheduled pursuant to Executive Order 20-69 of the Florida Governor, which suspends any Florida statute that requires a quorum to be present in person or requires a local government body to meet at a specific public place and permits local government bodies to use communications media technology such as Zoom. In order to participate in today's meeting, members of the public may dial 1-888-475-4499 and enter the webinar ID, which is 889-7212-0610#. Or the public can log into the Zoom app directly and enter the webinar ID, which again is 889-7212-0610. Members of the public wishing to speak on an item must click the raise hand icon if they're using the Zoom app, or dial *9 if they're participating by phone. Members of the public who do not have access to a computer and wish to provide testimony and or submit evidence in support of or opposition to an item scheduled to be heard today may appear in person at the Miami Beach Convention Center at 1901 Convention Center Drive, Washington Avenue entrance, in Art Deco Room 229. At this location, access to a computer will be provided. Lastly, before we get started, I'd like to read the city's notice regarding lobbyist registration. If you're appearing on behalf of a business, a corporation, or another person, you need to register as a lobbyist with the city clerk's office. If you haven't registered yet, you should register before you speak to the board. You don't have to register as a lobbyist if you're speaking only on behalf of yourself and not any other party, or if you're testifying as an expert witness providing only scientific, technical, or other specialized information or testimony in this public meeting, or if you're appearing as a representative of a neighborhood association without any compensation or reimbursement for your appearance to express support of or opposition to any item. Expert witnesses and representatives of neighborhood associations shall, prior to appearing, disclose in writing to the city clerk their name, address, and the principal on whose behalf they're communicating. If you're an architect, attorney, or employee representing an applicant or an objector, you must register as a lobbyist. These rules apply whether you're appearing in favor of or against an item, or encouraging or arguing against its passage, defeat, modification, or continuance. And lastly, Debbie, before I turn it back over to you, I'd just like to swear you in. Do you swear under oath that any and all testimony that you'll give in this proceeding today is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Nick. Good morning, members of the board. Today we do have 6 board members present. Board member Lopez will be absent today. The purpose of today's special meeting of the board is to for the planning department to give the board a presentation of a preliminary evaluation and recommendation report relative to the possible expansion of the North Shore Historic District. The possible expansion area is generally bounded by 77th Street on the south, Hawthorne Avenue and Crespi Boulevard on the west, 87th Street on the north, and Tatum Waterway Drive and Byron Avenue on the east. If the Historic Preservation finds that the possible district expansion area meets the criteria of the land development regulations for designation, it may instruct the Planning Department to prepare a designation report pursuant to Section 118.591 of the City Code. I wanted to briefly outline the historic designation process for any member of the public and for the board members. So the designation process is outlined in its entirety in Section 118.591 of the City Code. Requests for designation of an individual historic site or a historic district may be made to the Historic Preservation Board by a motion of the Historic Preservation Board itself, by the city manager, by resolution of the planning board or resolution of the city commission, by any property owner in respect to his own property, by a majority of property owners of record within a proposed district, or by resolution of the county Historic Preservation Board, or by resolution of any organization whose purpose it is to promote the historic, the preservation of historic sites. Step two of that would be to present a preliminary evaluation to the board. So that is what we're doing this morning. We did receive, going back to the request for designation, we did receive a request from the city manager to the planning department to prepare and present this preliminary evaluation report this morning to the board. We have noticed this in accordance with section 118.591E. And this is important because this is where we have, how we have noticed this particular application this morning. So I'm just gonna take 2 minutes to go through section 118.591E, which says the persons or entities listed may request the board to instruct the planning department to prepare a designation report and implement interim procedures for demolition permits. The planning director may prepare and submit to the Historic Preservation Board an evaluation and recommendation for designation at a meeting noticed in a newspaper of general circulation at least 5 business days in advance of the hearing. The property owner shall be notified in writing by regular mail sent to the address of the owner on the Miami-Dade County Property Appraiser's Tax Records and postmarked at least 5 business days in advance of the hearing. The meeting today of the preliminary evaluation was published in the Miami Herald on September 3rd, and the mail notice was sent to all property owners within the proposed or possible boundaries, and that mail notice was postmarked on September 2nd. So we are before you today at a properly noticed meeting to review the historic the preliminary evaluation for the possible historic district expansion. Following today's meeting, the board will be listening to our brief visual presentation. And if the board at today's meeting finds that the preliminary evaluation and recommendation presents a prima facie case that the property meets the criteria of the land development regulations for designation, then the board shall instruct the planning department to prepare a designation report. So that is what the question today is before the board. Now, if the board decides to instruct the planning department to prepare the designation report, there are several other steps that will need to take place. One, staff will notify the mayor and city commission of the board's action today. At that point, the city commission has 60 days to take any action if they so choose. If they do not, staff will return to the board to present the formal historic designation report on the area. And at that time, the board will make a recommendation. The recommendation would be to the city's planning board and to the city commission. Following an affirmative recommendation by this board on the designation report, that report would be transmitted to the planning board. The planning board would then make a recommendation to the city commission, and ultimately the city commission would hear this proposed designation at 2 hearings and could adopt the designation upon second reading public hearing. So I just wanted to outline the process, and I'm more than happy. I know it can be somewhat complex to answer any questions anyone may have today regarding the process. With that being said, PJ, I would like to start our visual presentation. Okay, if we could start from page one, I think this is the last page. Thank you. Again, so today we're here to review the preliminary evaluation. On the screen is a map. The map is of the adopted North Shore Historic District. And in gray is the possible expansion. So this would be a non-contiguous expansion of the North Shore Historic District. Staff is recommending that the boundaries of any designation report be consistent with the map shown on the screen. Next slide. So I wanted to briefly outline the historical background of this area. And I have two aerial photographs on this particular page. The top one is 1941. Obviously, this was pre-World War II. And the bottom photograph is an aerial photograph taken in 1954. So you can see that the area was vastly underdeveloped prior to World War II. And following World War II, you can see the incredible amount of buildings that had been constructed in this particular area. Prior to the 20th century, the land surrounding the Tatum Waterway was purchased by Henry Lum from the federal government for 35 cents an acre for the purpose of establishing a commercial coconut farm that extended from Key Biscayne to Jupiter, Florida. While the subdivision and planning of the majority of North Beach began following the end of World War I, the area along the Tatum Waterway was not subdivided or developed until after World War II. During the early 1940s, the city's population exploded and land value soared. This changing economy and demand for housing following World War II spurred the planning and subdivision of the land surrounding the Tatum Waterway. The Tatum Waterway subdivision was the last major subdivision to be platted in the city, and that was in 1946. Next slide. The majority of the buildings located within the possible boundaries were constructed following World War II through the mid-1960s. So they are primarily designed in the post-war modern style of architecture. It's also known as Miami Modern. That's a style that had originated in Miami and Miami Beach as a local adaptation to the post-war modern style. Below are just a list of character-defining features of this particular architectural style. Horizontal emphasis, flat roofs, projecting catwalks, space age design elements, breeze block, etc. Okay, next slide. Staff did evaluate the architecture and the area of the Tatum Waterway expansion for possible designation. Staff has found that four of the criteria are satisfied for this particular area. It is important to note that in order to be eligible for historic designation, only one of the criteria are required to be satisfied. Criteria number one, association with events that have made a significant contribution to the history of the city, county, state, or nation. The built environment of this particular area of the city is a direct reflection of the turn of events following World War II. 88 of the 104 buildings were constructed between the years of 1942 and 1965. Criteria three, they embody the distinctive characteristics of a historical period, architectural or design style or method of construction. The vast majority of the buildings located in this area are of the post-war modern style of architecture. The architecture in this area does exemplify the strong characteristics of this particular style of architecture, including cubic massing, projecting concrete eyebrows, exterior catwalks, outdoor staircases, broad overhangs, and flat roofs. Criteria number seven, be listed on the National Register of Historic Places. This is satisfied. This particular area of the city was listed on the National Register of Historic Places on November 18th, 2009. And number eight, consists of a geographically definable area that possesses a significant concentration of site, buildings, or structures united by historical significant past events or aesthetically by plan or physical development whose components may lack individual distinction. Staff has found this is satisfied. Again, 88 of the 104 buildings were designed at the same period of time between 1942 and 1965. And they do exemplify the post-war modern style of architecture. Now, the next slide, I do have just several examples of buildings located within this area. And if we could just flip through. And then I think there's one more. Okay. Oh, thank you. Okay, and that is our presentation. There is more detailed information in the written report itself. It was sent to all the board members and published online on Friday. So I am here to answer any questions you may have. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to City's legal counsel, Jeffrey Bass, to say a few words.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, a very pleasant good morning to you. Ms. Tackett did an extraordinary job laying out for you the merits of the applications that are before you, as well as the process that a designation travels and the notice process that the city has undertaken to bring us to the hearing this morning. I'm going to need to play lawyer for the absolute minimum amount of time required to clarify some suggestions and innuendo transmitted by a property owner lawyer to the city commission by correspondence dated yesterday. So I just reviewed it last night, but based on the suggestions that are in there, Mr. Chairman, if I may just take 1 minute with each member of the board to ask you three quick questions, I think that will be all that is necessary to clarify the confusion that the lawyer is trying to inject into these proceedings.
That's fine. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'll start with you. Do you believe that you could be fair and impartial this morning?
Absolutely.
Do you believe that you can fully participate in this morning's hearing in an impartial and unbiased way?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, have you been instructed to vote one way or the other on the application that is before you?
Absolutely not.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have no further questions. If I can now address, I'm just going down the list here. Mr. Klein? Is Mr. Klein with us? I don't see.
I think he's unmuted. There he is.
Yeah, it took me a minute to unmute.
Okay, sorry. Board Member Klein, nice to see you this morning. I'm going to ask you the same questions. Do you believe you could be fair and impartial this morning?
Yes, sir.
Do you believe you can fully participate in the hearing this morning without bias?
Yes, correct.
And have you been instructed to vote one way or the other on the application that is before you?
Not at all, and it wouldn't matter. I'll vote my conscience, what I believe.
Thank you very much. Board Member Liebman?
Yes. Do you hear me?
Yes, good morning. Nice to see you. Good
morning.
I'm glad you still recognize me in the pandemic.
You look younger than ever.
Ms. Liebman, do you believe you can be fair and impartial this morning?
Yes.
Do you believe you'll be able to fully participate in the hearing this morning without bias?
Absolutely.
And have you been instructed to vote one way or the other on the application that's
been filed? No.
Okay. No further questions for you. Board Member Litt?
Morning.
Good morning. Nice to see you. Do you believe you could be fair and impartial this morning?
Yes.
Do you believe you will be able to fully participate in the proceedings this morning without bias?
Yes.
Have you been instructed to vote one way or the other on the matter that is before you?
No.
Thank you, Mr. Litt. Mr. Needleman?
Yes.
Good morning. Nice to see you. I'm going to ask you the same questions. Do you believe you could be fair and impartial this morning?
Yes, I do.
Do you believe that you can fully participate in the proceedings this morning without bias?
Yes.
And have you been instructed to vote one way or the other on the matter that's before you?
No, I have not.
Thank you. And now, Board Member Pascal?
Morning.
Morning. Do you believe, Board Member Pascal, that you could be fair and impartial this morning?
Yes, I can.
Do you believe you'll be able to fully participate in the hearing this morning without bias?
Yes, I do.
And have you been instructed to vote one way or the other on the matter that is before you?
No, I have not.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm going to mute myself now and turn it over to Mr. Nicholas Kalergis.
Mr. Chair, I think before we open to the public, I'd like to ask the board members to disclose the names of any individuals with whom they've had ex parte communications. And as just as a reminder, under our code, an ex parte communication is any written or oral communication with any member which may directly or indirectly influence the disposition of an application other than those that are made on the record during the public hearing today. So if we could just go down the line and ask if any board members have any disclosures to make.
Yes, I do. I was called by Mr. Kasdan, and I did not discuss anything related to this issue with him, even though he insisted that I do so.
Thank you. Okay, how about here? I'll call each of you individually. Mr. Litt?
No, just received the email, but nothing beyond that.
Thank you. Mr. Needleman?
No, again, just that letter and that email that was sent out that we talked about. That's it.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Klein?
No, nothing. And I don't check that email address I have for this group very often, so I can't attest to if anything's even come in.
Okay, Ms. Liebman?
Yes, I was called by Mr. Kasdan, when I answered the phone, I was quite confused as to why he was calling. I told him that this was a judicial matter, and why would he be calling? And he wanted to explain his side of the issue, which he did briefly. I had to ask a couple of questions, but there was nothing really of substance that happened. My biggest problem and question, which I guess I can ask you, was this a legislative matter that we're doing?
So the question's a fair one. I'd like Jeff, I see your hand up, if you'd like to respond to that after I just asked Mr. Pascal if he has any ex parte communications to disclose, and then I have one quick statement I'd like to make.
I do not. I did not notice, having received the email that everyone else is referring to. I have not had any phone calls. Received a couple of inquiries from members of the public asking what was happening, and I didn't really know. And so beyond that, there's been no discussion.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Pascal. I would also just like to add on the board's behalf that to the extent that any conversations that board members held with Debbie Tackett, with me, or with our outside counsel, Jeff Bass, that to the extent that those discussions were ex parte communications, I would like the record to reflect that we did meet regarding this matter. Jeff, did you have something you wanted to add?
I just wanted to respond to Commissioner Liebman's question. We do not believe that this matter is quasi-judicial, but in an abundance of caution, we are treating it as though it were, to avoid any suggestion that there has been the compromise of the fairness and impartiality that one would expect in a quasi-judicial proceeding. And I believe, Commissioner Liebman, you may have misspoken. You called it a judicial proceeding. I believe you meant to say a quasi-judicial proceeding. So we are just let the record. Could you say yes? So the record.
Yeah.
You can,
yes, my mistake.
Okay. So we're trying to do two things here. We're trying to give all of the fairness and procedural niceties that one could possibly demand in a quasi-judicial proceeding, even though it is our fundamental bedrock position that the creation of a district is a legislative matter. So to accommodate the request for a quasi-judicial hearing and to obey, as best we understand the circuit court's opinion, we are treating this proceeding as a quasi-judicial proceeding, even though we believe by code it is not. That said, we are providing the disclosures in an abundance of caution so that if this were to be deemed a quasi-judicial proceeding, ultimately and finally, then we would have nevertheless complied with the requirements for a quasi-judicial hearing. But make no mistake, by conducting this proceeding this way, we are not admitting or conceding or waiving our bedrock position, which is that matters of this variety are legislative. We're just doing this in an abundance of caution, which is why Mr. Kaler just asked for each of you to make those disclosures, which is also why I asked each of you those brief questions to make sure that we start today from a clean slate, totally free of any preconceived notions, so that you can make a decision like a quasi-judge based on the matters that you see today, that you hear today, based on the questions you asked today, and based on the testimony of your staff that you heard today. Did I sufficiently answer your question?
Totally.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. I just also wanted to point out that I did receive the letter from Mr. Kasdan yesterday evening. In the letter, I just wanted to clarify, there was a suggestion that staff was told not to talk to Mr. Kasdan. That is not true. I did check my missed calls this morning on my office phone, and I did see there was a missed call from Mr. Kasdan at 4:53 p.m. on Friday. I apologize that I missed that call, and I'm more than happy to speak with anyone regarding this matter in the future. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you, Debbie. And Mr. Chair, I think this might be a good time to open the public hearing. I'll keep track of time. Let's see, do we have any speakers with their hands up?
The first speaker is Daniel Seraldo.
Okay, Mr. Seraldo, do you swear under oath that any and all testimony that you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. What do I have, 2 minutes?
You have 2 minutes, but if you'd like to request additional time, please feel free to ask the chair, and I'll keep trying.
Okay. So thank you all. My name is Daniel Seraldo, and I'm representing Miami Design Preservation League. Miami Design Preservation League is tasked with a mission to preserve, protect, and promote historic properties and resources throughout Miami Beach and beyond. We have reviewed the preliminary evaluation report, and we believe that this is competent, substantial evidence on which to base a decision to proceed with whether it's a historic designation or the redesignation, as many of us feel this is sort of a redesignation process. I want to point the attention that there is a very clear public record over several years that we're happy to share regarding concerns about Tatum Waterways historic designation. This led to what was truly groundbreaking resiliency criteria that has become a model for our municipality and others. I'm very concerned about this one property owner who purchased property, renovated the property, now has the property for sale, but yet has proceeded to, use up all of our time, the public's time, and the court's time in a dispute over the designation that took place a couple of years ago. But since this is a new hearing, the facts of the matter are that this area is historic, that we have the code in place, we have a record of decisions made in the city over many years, and we have fair and equitable processes. Thank you to the board for limiting your conversations outside of the public eye. Your conversation should be here on the record, and we hope you'll proceed on the historic designation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Daniel. Next, Debbie.
Neeson Kasdan is the next speaker.
Good morning. Good morning, Chair, members of the board. Neeson Kasdan, Ackerman LLP. I would request 10 minutes as I have a number of procedural issues to deal with.
That's fine. Please move ahead swiftly.
Okay. So I represent YTEC 180 units of Miami Beach Investments, which is the largest property owner in the Tatum Waterway. I also believe I speak for many of the other property owners in Tatum Waterway who are not aware of or did not receive adequate notice of this hearing. First, I would like to deal with a couple of the procedural issues where you have not received full information from your advisors at the city. Number one, Ms. Tackett read that this was pursuant to 118-591 of the city code regarding historic designation processes. But if you look at the public notice that was mailed, posted, and advertised, it says it is also pursuant to section 118-8 of the city code, which is quasi-judicial hearings and proceedings. Mr. Bass candidly acknowledged that this was being done pursuant to those proceedings. The notice requirements in that are completely clear. It is a 30-day notice requirement. That notice has not been provided, so it violates that provision of the city code as advertised, as a professed stated public procedure for this procedure. Secondarily, with regard to the quasi-judicial questions, quasi-judicial procedures to determine if there have been any additional or outside communication, Mr. Bass failed to ask one question. And that question he failed to ask is, have you had, as board members, each of you, ex parte discussions other than with me representing a property owner, and with whom you had those discussions, and what was the subject of those discussions? Mr. Kalergis indicated and noted that there were discussions from city, I guess it was staff or attorney, with board members in order for there to be a proper and adequate disclosure of ex parte communications. Each board member must go through the same series of questions, and each board member must be asked, with whom did they have communications? And more importantly, what was the substance of those communications? What were the board members advised or told to do? It is not the red herring question of, have you been told how to vote? It is, what advice or instruction were you given? There were clearly those communications based on Mr. Kalergis's statement. Now you need to go the next step, each and every one, say who communicated with you and what was the substance of those communications. Now let me turn to the final procedural issue as well, which is with regard to this crisis, which calls for a need for an emergency hearing. As is fully set forth in my letter and the letter of my colleague, Joni Armstrong Coffey, there is no crisis. If you go along Tatum Waterway, you will see there is no imminent threat of demolition. The staff report on its own, stated that since 2009, two buildings have been demolished, and it's not known whether those were even contributing. But more importantly, all you have to do is drive the street yourself to see there is no imminent threat. Because in order to demolish a building must be vacant. And not only must it be vacant, but they must cut off all utilities, electricity, et cetera, et cetera. You can drive up and down both sides of Tatum Waterway and see that none of the buildings are vacant, which means that they would have to be vacated of all paying tenants and then shut down to be demolished. In fact, as you would notice, and as many of you are aware, my client, Witek, has invested millions in upgrading its property and is about and has put the properties as well up for sale. This is, frankly, the equivalent of the immigrant caravan coming across the border. It is a threat that does not exist, that is being used to scare people into precipitous action, including in violation of the city's code and due process rights. Secondarily, and more importantly, what we have seen here is this is a preordained outcome. There has been, or appears to be, a manipulation of the process, limiting the discussion amongst the agency responsible for this process, the Historic Preservation Board, responsible for overseeing the process, and also limiting or banning affected parties, such as me and my client, property owners, from their First Amendment rights of free speech and to petition their government. That includes the very first section of the city charter, the Citizens' Bill of Rights, which contains a right to be heard and a right to notice, as well as the section cited in the advertisement, section 2-14 of the city code, the citizens' right, residents' right to know, stating it shall be the policy of the city to provide targeted neighborhood notice, timely opportunities for input, and procedural fairness in hearings for any proposed policy, ordinance, project, or other matter that impacts residents' quality of life. So what you have seen is a limitation and a violation of constitutional rights, a violation of city code provisions as well regarding access substantively. This process is completely postponing any consideration of sea level rise or resiliency, which is mandated by the city code as part of the designation process, as part of any legislative process in this city. And it is ignoring the mandate of the Plan No B, the recommendation of Plan No B to consider TDRs. It is unfortunate that we have to have this kind of rush to judgment and complete failure to observe proper process, notice, and a right for input. All we are asking for is that this board, in the ordinary course, and city staff as well with us, have a considered discussion about the designation process. And that considered discussion would include the fact that resiliency and sea level rise considerations should be taken into effect. And one of the recommendations at the time the original Tatum Waterway designation was considered, and that was recommended in Plan No B, that a mechanism be developed for transfer of development rights from the designated properties. This will enhance resiliency and the long-term financial sustainability of these properties. I don't think it's too much to ask that we have a collaborative discussion. There is no imminent threat. The record is now replete with violations of process and rights, from constitutional rights right on down through notice rights at the city code. We still have a situation where we've had a failure to have an adequate disclosures of ex parte communications with city staff and attorneys and what you were advised and recommended. And all we're asking for is a chance to have a fair discussion, when you all know, because if you've visited that neighborhood, you'll see no building is about to be torn down. No building has been vacated. In fact, many of the property owners, led by my client, have invested millions in improving these properties. All we ask is for Let's act reasonably. Let's act fairly. Let's have an appropriate discussion. Let us not act in a manner of shutting out all of those things, rushing to judgment, manipulating the process, foreordaining the decision, precluding active citizen participation and property owner participation. I think, candidly, Bill Barr would be proud of such a proceeding. Let's sit, let's talk, let's discuss, and let's answer the questions as well regarding the ex parte communications and procedures that I lodged to you. We remain available for further comment and discussion if you have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Neeson. Are you sure you have all the time you need?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only other thing, and by the way, I would like to mention, we did send the letters out. The letters in depth set forth our position, both legally and procedurally and substantively. I would ask that you read those letters, consider those letters. I do think that the notice is, not only is it not adequate clearly on its face in terms of the city's quasi-judicial proceedings, which require 30 days notice, but I also believe that this is that many property owners in the neighborhood, because of the incredibly short time in which notice was mailed and posted, are not aware of this proceeding. This board in the past has been very generous when neighbors are concerned about a procedure or a process of making sure that there is afforded adequate opportunity for discussion and communication, which clearly hasn't happened in this instance. Those are the comments I have. Again, I commend you. The final point I would make is I am not accusing any of the board members, I think, of doing anything improper. I think that you are trying to discharge your duties as best as possible. But I do think that you have been provided either misinformation or been directed in a certain fashion that violates constitutional rights of individuals and property owners and is resulting in an unfair process. And that's why I think everybody needs to just take a breath, step back, let's sit and talk, because as I think I've communicated to Commissioner Liebman, and I would have to others, it is not the intention of my client to stop the designation of buildings on the Tatum Waterway. However, what our client would like to do is make sure that two things that must be considered along with that, sea level rise and resiliency, and the creation of TDRs, are given equal dignity and treatment in this process, and that we have a rational discussion and not a railroaded process. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving me all this time.
Thank you very much, Nathan, for your insightful comments. We greatly appreciate them. Debbie, next speaker.
I think I see Mr. Bass with his hands up. Jeff, would you like to speak?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, I apologize for having to play a more active role during this hearing than I otherwise would have preferred. But Mr. Kasdan made some allegations and suggested that there were some improprieties. So I'm going to do two things that I normally wouldn't do. I'm going to waive the attorney-client privilege, and I'm going to ask each board member that spoke to offices of the city attorney and staff, we're going to go one by one, and I'm going to ask you, what did we discuss, who was present, and whether you can make a fair decision based on that. It would really be Mr. Kasdan's job to have asked you these questions, but I'm going to go the extra length here to be 1,000% disclosing. So, Mr. Chair, let me start with you. You and I and Mr. Kalergis had a conversation, did we not?
Yes.
And do you recall that conversation?
Yes.
What did I say to you?
You just basically stated there would be a meeting today and who would attend. And that's basically it, as far as I remember.
Did I tell you not to speak during this hearing today?
No, you did not. But to clarify something that Mr. Kasdan said, I must say something that we as board members are under no obligation to speak to anybody or attend any meeting ex parte or otherwise if we choose not to. We're not obligated to speak to anybody outside of these meetings. I just wanted to make that clear. I've been here 5 years and I rarely go out of my way to speak to anybody, because to me that just opens the door for ex parte communications, which I don't do. So that's my take on it.
Mr. Chair, do you recall anything else that we discussed during our chat?
No, nothing jumps out.
Mr. Kasdan suggested that this process was preordained. Is your mind made up? Is this result preordained?
Well, frankly, it's at 72 years old. I don't remember all that went on in previous discussions about this, because I'm not a North Beecher and I'm very neutral because I have no dog in the fight. And no, I don't recall or have any prejudice one way or another, because personally, it does not affect me. So why would I have any preconceived notion or issue? I don't.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Yes. We had a brief chat, did we not?
Yes, we did Friday afternoon.
How long did it last?
Somewhere maybe 5 minutes, maybe, I think.
Do you recall what we discussed?
That this meeting was going to be scheduled, and that you were suggesting that I treat this like any other hearing that we have, listen to the information. If I have questions, to certainly ask the questions and vote in the way that I feel fit to vote.
Mr. Kasdan characterized this process as possessing a preordained result. Do you believe that to be a true statement?
No, not at all.
Did I say anything to you to suggest the result?
No, you did not.
Did I say anything to limit how you were to vote today?
Not at all.
Okay. Commissioner Liebman?
Yes.
We had a brief chat, did we not?
Yes.
Do you recall who else was on the phone?
Debbie, I believe Debbie was on the phone.
Okay. Mr. Kasdan discussed this as being a process with a preordained result. Is your mind made up?
No. Whatever he talked to me about, I didn't get that impression. I got the impression he was trying to explain to me what his purpose was in this conflict. And he did all the talking. He told me what he felt. I probably have some questions for him later, if that's acceptable.
Sure.
But other than that, no, I didn't. I would have liked to have talked to you longer.
And if I may, Commissioner Liebman, do you recall what you and I discussed? Do you recall what I said to you about the hearing?
No, it was just, I felt you were just performing your duty as a lawyer to give us some idea of why this is happening and what was going to happen. But just in general, there's nothing, no substance that I felt I had to cling to.
Did I tell you which way to vote?
No.
Did I do anything to handcuff your ability to ask questions and participate as a board member?
No.
And do you feel you can fully participate today, notwithstanding the conversation that we had?
Right.
Okay. Mr. Litt?
Yes.
Did we have a brief chat?
We did, on the 9th.
Do you recall how long it lasted?
Less than 30 minutes.
Do you recall what we discussed?
I'm reviewing my meeting notes. We discussed that there would be a meeting regarding the North Shore Historic District. We discussed the designation process, and the question before the board would be whether we direct staff to prepare a formal designation report.
Did I tell you which way to vote?
No.
Did I tell you to limit your participation in today's hearing?
No.
Thank you. Mr. Needleman?
Yes.
We had a chat, did we not?
We did.
Do you recall what we discussed?
I think you gave maybe a 30-second recap of the history of why we're here today, and we talked about that we'd be voting on this issue again.
Do you recall how long our total conversation was?
4 minutes, 5 minutes, maybe.
Did I tell you which way to vote?
No.
Did I tell you you were limited in any way, shape, or form on how to vote?
No.
Thank you. Mr. Pascal?
Hello. Yes.
We had a brief chat, did we not?
We did.
Do you recall how long it lasted?
It was very short. I think I waited for the conversation to begin longer than the conversation actually had. Yes, less than 15 minutes.
Apologies for my less than stellar internet connection at the house. Do you recall what I said to you?
I recall you're going over the procedure, going over what the process would be, restating what our role is, and I believe a couple of times mentioned that, obviously objectivity and restating that no one was telling anyone how to think or how to vote specifically.
So do you recall me specifically telling you that you were free to vote however you believed appropriate?
Yes.
And I didn't tell you which way to vote, correct?
Correct.
And I didn't tell you to limit your participation in any way, correct?
Correct.
And so to the extent that Mr. Kazin characterized this as a preordained hearing, is there anything that I said to you that would lend credence to that?
No, there's not.
Okay. Thank you very much. So now, Mr. Chairman, I think I've covered everybody. I'd like to give Mr. Neese and Kazin the opportunity to say now to the board what he wanted to say to them during the ex-party communications that he attempted to have, to the extent that that differs from the statement that he made.
Okay, that's very, very fair. Thank you. Let's do that. Neeson?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you for this further opportunity. I would like to point out one thing. The one question that was not asked by Mr. Bass of the 7 board members was whether there was any discussion with the board members about how they should handle inquiries or conversations from members outside of the board. In other words, ex parte discussions, and whether there should be any limitations or caution or any other advice with regard to communications with interested parties who might approach them. That question was not asked. And that is the essential question, not whether everyone agreed to a foreordained result, although that would be something else if that happened. With respect to the substance, and that question still hasn't been answered. Now, with respect to the substance of this, I think in my letter, I set forth what we are seeking, which is, and I'll repeat it because it bears repeating, because it would be good if we could all collaboratively focus
moving forward in the same direction for the benefit of historic preservation, which is an important idea in our community, as well as sea level rise and resiliency and implementation of the tenets of Plan No B, which is equally important. And it's quite simply this. And what my client has been trying to interject into the discussion for some time, and I think all of you are well aware because you are witnesses to it, because you've gone to the properties, you've seen the properties. These properties that Witek owns were the bane of the neighborhood before my client purchased them, with hundreds of crime calls and dilapidated and deteriorated condition. And now you go past those properties today, you can see the results of my client investing millions of dollars into the property, making them quality residential units, fully occupied with beautiful landscaping that is an enhancement to the neighborhood. So clearly it is not my client's intention to demolish the buildings on the Tatum Waterway side within the proposed historic district. So what are we talking about? What we're talking about is if you go to Plan No B, and if you go to the original City Commission action, which was referenced in Joni Armstrong Coffey's letter to you, there were two things that were specifically contemplated. One was that in consideration and at the time that designation of the Tatum Waterway properties was done, there would be transfer of development rights, of the unused development rights from those properties originally contemplated to be town center, which is no longer necessary. But that is what was the package, designation and TDRs. In addition, and let me expand on that a little bit further. What we have been trying to communicate and want to communicate to the city leaders, this board and city staff, is that our client has come up with an elegant and simple plan for accomplishing both of those objectives, which is that TDRs be created for the unused development rights on the site of historically designated properties with a recorded covenant, covenanting in perpetuity, regardless of what legislative action is taken, that the buildings would be preserved and maintained. And with that covenant, the excess development rights would be allowed to be transferred across Tatum Waterway Drive, where our client has a number of other properties that are not historically designated, so that they might build new, attainable, resilient housing, good housing for people of North Beach, with amenities for the residents and for the neighborhood. That's the discussion we've been seeking to have. In addition to that, the staff report candidly admits that the resiliency issues are not dealt with in the designation report or at this time, and suggests that they should be dealt with at a later point in time. As important as historic preservation is, I think you cannot say that it is more important than sea level rise and resiliency considerations, which are the defining issue of our time in this community and all coastal communities. By engaging in the dialogue to come up with a creative solution that I have just proposed, there are a few other things that are done that are able to advance resiliency. For instance, and this was, and Kirk knows this well, part of consideration for use changes in the Tatum Waterway District, building a seawall that would protect the interior lands from flooding. What our client has proposes is to build a seawall along the length of their properties on Tatum Waterway. And in fact, in exchange for receiving the TDRs, allowing the properties across the street to be connected, creating not only a permanent seawall that will protect all of the properties, the historic properties and others, but also provide public access to the waterway along the Tatum waterway. This is a win-win scenario. And the fact that we have not been able to even have a discussion about it is very troubling to me as a elder in this city who has invested so much time in my lifetime in seeing that this city progresses in a good fashion. And so that's what we're asking you as a board. Take a breath. You can look yourself at all the properties on Tatum Waterway. There is not a single one which is in imminent danger of being demolished. They are all occupied. All the tenants would have to be removed. The buildings would have to be stripped and gutted. The utilities would have to be cut off. There is no threat whatsoever. So what I'm proposing that we do is sit and talk, and we can start today collaboratively about how we go about both designating the properties and providing for their and the neighborhood's long-term benefit by dealing with resiliency and TDR issues. That's what I'm asking. Take a breath, step back, let's engage in a dialogue. Nothing's going to happen to the properties. Don't be scared into action. Let's talk. Let's do that starting today. And that means that you need to defer this action in addition to all of the notice issues, which have not been addressed because the Chapter 118-8 quasi-judicial notice provisions has not been addressed. And this does not comport with those. And that's what the advertised notice said. But let's be adults and sit down and talk about this over the next few weeks. I think we can come to a very beneficial solution for all concerned in North Beach. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kasdan. Debbie? Mr. Bass?
I think Mr. Bass wanted to respond.
Yes.
First?
Yes. Mr. Kasdan, is there anything else that you would like to add to your presentation today? Is there any statement that you wished to have made to a board member individually that you have not yet been able to make to the board member today in the public record? Do you have anything further?
Well, at this point, Mr. Bass, I'm going to see how the proceedings continue. And if I have more questions or statements to make, I'll raise my hand.
Okay, but my question is this. You've said that there was a constitutional deprivation of your right to petition, somehow suggesting that the inability to speak to the board members deprived your ability to make your point. I want to make very clear that the time is yours to say now, and again, later, should you wish, what it is or what it was that you wish to have said prior.
Okay. May I?
Sure.
Yeah. So it's important to understand that the process is not just what happens in this 1 hour of hearing or 2 hours of hearing. The process includes things which affect a fair and equal outcome of this process. We started with a failure to disclose until Mr. Kalergis stepped forward and disclosed it, that there was even communication with each and every individual board member. Then I must say, Mr. Bass, you're a fine lawyer, but you asked a series of leading questions of each and every one of the people there and didn't ask the question about whether or not individual board members were told about whether and how they should communicate with others off the board outside of this hearing. That question still remains unanswered. The failure to comply with 118-8 still is there, stands unrebutted. And beyond that, there's a fundamental fairness question about this rushed notice, which I'm quite sure a number of property owners are not aware of. Some of them don't, are absentee owners and usually may not get this until days later or weeks later, which is why the 30-day notice and the quasi-judicial proceedings is part of the reason why it's there. And so these are the reasons why I think we have a problem. It's not just what's happening in the hearing. And as I say, representing the major property owner in the area, but also I think speaking on behalf of a number of other property owners, as these proceedings continue, there may be other, I tried to raise my hand earlier, the beginning of the proceeding, to raise some of these questions about the ex parte communications, but was not recognized. I may have other comments in the course of these proceedings where I would want to be recognized because of the effect that this has on property rights, which is a protected constitutional right. But again, it's great for us lawyers to banter back and forth about procedural matters, but I'm asking the board members to use their heads and their minds to work collaboratively to come up with a win-win solution for preservation, for the properties that are in the district, and for the neighborhood. And that's what the focus should be on, not a rush to judgment. And by the way, I do also recognize board members are fully within their right not to communicate if they don't want to on quasi-judicial issues. And there are a number of board members and a number of boards I've dealt with that just don't like to have those communications. My concern is those who typically or often would have those communications being discouraged from having those communications. And that discouragement is not necessarily directly being told, don't speak to this property owner. It can just be by the very nature of who's speaking, the very unorthodox procedure. I would ask any board member the last time they were communicated to by an outside counsel on the conduct of a hearing. I think that in and of itself is highly unorthodox and sends a message in and of itself. So again, I remain available to answer questions and to engage in dialogue. I will continue to raise my hand as I feel necessary in representing my client, but more importantly, in working towards a common sense resolution of this. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. If it's okay, I would like to discuss some of what Neeson just said.
Just hold on one second, Nancy. Debbie, is that...
We have a few more members of the public that also wish to speak. I just wanted to respond to Mr. Kasdan's concerns about our preliminary evaluation report, if I may. There are three sea level rise criteria that we did respond to on page 10 of the report. The first one, whether the proposal affects an area that is vulnerable to the impacts of sea level rise pursuant to the adopted projections. So on page 10, we outlined that yes, this is based on LIDAR data. This area is vulnerable to sea level rise. And we outlined some data points that we were able to obtain. Number two, whether the proposal will increase the city's, the resiliency of the city with respect to sea level rise. We did respond to that criteria. We do believe this possible designation has the potential to increase the resiliency of the city. We outlined that substantial alterations, adaptive reuse, and or redevelopment of many of the properties may be required. This is something that is consistently reviewed and approved by the board at our monthly meeting, certificate of appropriateness for alteration, demolition, and additions for new construction in order to meet resiliency. This is something that's common practice for the board. So we do believe it has the potential to increase the city's resiliency. And number three, whether the proposal is compatible with the city's sea level rise mitigation and resiliency efforts. Again, staff believes that this may be compatible with the city's sea level rise mitigation and resiliency efforts. We are advising the board in our response that substantial alterations may likely be required to many of these properties to increase their resiliency. However, that is part of the certificate of appropriateness review process that this board has and is consistently flexible with property owners regarding changes, especially changes that are in response to sea level rise issues. I also wanted to point out on page 16 and 17 of our preliminary evaluation, the two properties that were demolished after the National Register listing are identified. Again, they are identified on page 16 and 17, and both of those buildings were listed as contributing in the National Register nomination. That's all I have. I would suggest we move on to the next speaker, which is Oolite Art Classes.
Hi.
Hi, good morning. Do you swear under oath that any and all testimony that you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I am. So actually, I am Melissa Gabriel. I work at Ulay Art, so that's why I'm using my account and participating to this meeting with that name. But I am Melissa Gabriel. I am a property owner right on Tatum Waterway Drive next to Whitehead properties. I actually received the city notification for September 14th and another notification for October 13th. So I don't know if this is going to continue in a month or so. So if that's the case for Mr. Kassenin's worries, it will continue in a month. So we were all notified with 30 days in advance, if that's the case. So I would like to have more than 2 minutes. He had like 40 minutes. He says that we have to breathe and take calm. But what I see is a constant attempt from this property owner, which has several units, not only that property of 180, but many other properties along the waterway drive, is to change the designation. Less than a month ago, they all tried to change the designation of the land from residential to, you know, mixed use. And we fought for that because we want to have to live in a place that is preserved, you know, preserve what we have. This land is, I mean, Miami has only 100 years, and we could see on the presentation that whatever is here is not more than 60 years old. And so we have to, you know, preserve that as a memory and also for the quality of life for all the people that lives here. So my concern is that, this was, so I don't know what happened in between because I didn't have access to the preliminary report, although I log in to the, you know, to the agenda, but there wasn't like a link to download. So I really don't know why we are again here and why we lost as a city. We lost the demand that Whitehead did against the city. What I can say is that we need to preserve this area. Tatum Waterway is an active canal, has a lot of life and activity, and we don't want it to become, you know, like sunny aisles with high rise buildings or a lot of traffic. It's very narrow. We have, you know, Manantees live here. dolphins and all sort of animals, and we want to we live in a natural environment, and that's why we chose to live in North Beach and not somewhere else. So I really hope that we can start the process again of designation and keep, you know, this part included in the historic district. If it's not, I am confused about that. If someone can really give me some answers about that, I would really appreciate it, because I really don't understand why we are going again through this process.
Okay, so thank you so much. Very much. Debbie, next speaker.
We have several more speakers. I do want to just note that Daniel Seraldo and Neeson Kasdan both have their hands up again. I would recommend that the board get through the callers, the speakers that have not yet spoken, and then if there's repeat, that will be up to the board. But our next new speaker is a phone number ending in the numbers 1733.
Okay, and I'd like to ask our caller, do you swear under oath that any and all testimony that you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? I think the caller may be on mute. PJ, is the caller on mute?
Hello?
Hi, yes. Do you so swear?
Yes, yes, I want to state my opinion. My name is Carmen Fiori. I am a property owner. I live at 8255 Abbott Avenue, apartment 201, Miami Beach. I want to say that I am in favor of restoring Tatum Waterway local historic designation as part of the North Shore Historic District expansion. And I think that Miami Beach isn't just its beautiful beaches and open blue skies, a very valuable and relevant aspect of Miami Beach, which gives character and representation to our city, is the history reflected in its Maimo, Art Deco, and Mediterranean architecture. There are studies and publications that show how having and preserving these emblematic buildings contributes character and consequently value to the neighborhoods. Not realizing and not appreciating that denotes a lack of culture, ignorance, or having so many dollar signs in the brain that there is no room for anything else. The attitude of not only white tech, but other developers is really questionable. This should concern all Miami Beach residents. We must unite to achieve goals that can serve as a precedent and a clear message so that those who want to come to invest in Miami Beach do so, taking into consideration the character and needs of our neighborhoods and their residents, both owners and tenants. And very importantly, our infrastructure. We must bring back the local historic designation for Tatum Waterway and hope to get it for the entire North Shore Historic District in order to protect all of our iconic buildings from vultures who demand more than they deserve and are willing to give to the community. I want to the National Trust of Historic Preservation, in a publication from December 8, 2015, lists the following 10 benefits of establishing a local historic district. Local districts protect the investments of owners and residents of historic properties. Properties within local historic districts appreciate a rate greater than the local market overall, as well as faster than similar non-designated neighborhoods. Local districts encourage better quality design. In this case, better design equals a greater sense of cohesiveness, more innovative use of materials, and greater public appeal. Local districts help the environment. Local districts are energy efficient. Historic districts are a vehicle for education. Historic districts can positively impact the local economy through tourism. Protecting local historic districts can enhance business recruitment potential. Local districts provide social and psychological benefits. Local districts give communities a voice in their future. By participating in the designation process, citizens can help direct their community's path. Okay, that's all. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your insightful comments. We appreciate them. Debbie, next speaker, please.
Next speaker is Matisse Cohen.
Hi, Matisse, do you swear under oath that any and all testimony that you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. You may proceed.
First of all, thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to have this conversation. First, I'd like to say that I did not receive notice, and when I was alluded to the to this hearing, it did not give me proper or ample time to prepare. So I will be brief on just one issue. I'm a long-term property owner on Crestview Boulevard, and I believe that there is a unique opportunity that this board has now by having this conversation to look at the complete picture of the Tatum Waterway and to look to the methodology in which the city and this board using its powers to revitalize the International Inn and to take it from a property that was a induce the property owner to locally to designate its own property and the trade-offs and I would say the mature look at the problems that that property were having and to give them height, CUP processes, all the benefits that went to offset to restore that property should not be any different than we look at the Tatum Waterway. And as you know, that over the last 5 years, from the moratorium to the designation, the property owners have stepped up, but there's a limit to what they can do. And without having significant trade-offs to be able to really preserve these properties to the standard that this board would like and the city would like, there has to be some trade-offs. And there has to be a more insightful look and have a deeper conversation like the start of this this hearing to see what within the designation can the Historic Preservation Board provide so that the property owners are not necessarily only incentivized, but are able to offset the additional costs that go along with the responsibilities of maintaining and preserving these properties. And I would only request that this conversation be expanded so that the property owners, together with whether it's MDPL or the Historic Board, and have a discussion regarding what is these costs, additional costs. As you know, the city has done a study by Alan Schulman on the Flamingo Park area and come to the conclusion that there have to be some trade-offs to offset those costs of resiliency. And that was presented to the Historic Preservation Board and to the commission. It's been deferred a couple of times, but this is the conversation that we really must have because I don't think anybody is saying don't designate the properties. We're just saying, give us an envelope or a criteria that will allow us to one, preserve them properly, and two, be able to offset the costs that are needed in order to do so.
Mr. Cohen, I gave you an extra minute. Would you like additional time?
Yes, we need to move on because we have a deadline of 11 a.m. and there are other speakers. So thank you, Mr. Cohen. Debbie?
Before we hear from our next speaker, and I'll be brief, just since this question of notice has come up, one additional time. Notice of this hearing was provided pursuant to 118-591E of the City Code, which is a first step in the process of initiating designation. What that section requires is that notice be given in a newspaper of general circulation at least 5 business days in advance of the hearing, and that property owners be notified in writing by regular mail sent to the address of the owner on the property appraiser's records and postmarked at least 5 business days in advance of the hearing. This first step, today's hearing, is not identified in the city code or the circuit court opinion in the YTEC litigation as a quasi-judicial hearing. The hearing that the circuit court opinion identifies as quasi-judicial would be the hearing on the formal designation report. There will only be a hearing on a formal designation report if the HPB finds today that the preliminary evaluation presents a prima facie case that the property meets the criteria of the LDRs for designation. and if the HPB instructs the planning department to prepare a designation report. In the interest of full transparency, and given that testimony from today's meeting may be incorporated in the record at the next hearing, should the HPB decide to move forward with designation, we've asked our board members to disclose ex parte communications they've engaged in thus far, and I've sworn in witnesses. But I just want to be clear about what notice was required for this hearing, and the notice for this hearing complied with the requirements of 118-591E. So at this time, we can call up our next speaker.
The next speaker is Wayne Roberts.
Mr. Roberts, do you swear under oath that any and all testimony that you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. I want
to commend this board because it's probably one of the last boards that is that's balanced, that isn't biased towards the developers that make all the PAC money donations. So I really want to commend you for being the voice of the community. On that note, we're under siege. Miami Beach is under siege from developers. And I find it sadly humorous that they use sea rise and environmental concerns to build more density, more height, more development, which logically is the opposite of environmental good health. And the realities of it is it's all about money. And it's their money, not the residents' money. And most of them don't even live here. So I commend you for defending the interests of the community. And I also want to state that seawalls are important. And it should be broadly applied across the city. The crumbling, the city's responsibility, that the private owner's responsibility is to ensure that they are adequately provided across the city, whether we provide financing for that or whatever for private owners, it should be applied. And I don't think it's outside this group's domain, but I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Roberts. Debbie, next speaker.
Next speaker is Paula.
Hi, Paula. Do you swear under oath that any and all testimony that you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. You may proceed.
Okay, I'd like to make 2 points. Mr. Kasdan has been making promises to the neighborhood on behalf of the properties. However, I have read recently that all of the properties are for sale. So what happens to all of those promises that if we take off the historic designation or if we allow for special allowances of that designation to YTEC, aren't there properties for sale at this point? That's my first point. My second point is I have the notice sitting right here in front of me, the notice for today, and a big red notice in front of my building, plus a notice via mail for the meeting on the 14th. So I've received notice for today. I've received a big red notice in front of my building, plus a notice by mail for the meeting on the 14th. I ride my bike in the neighborhood, and I know Mr. Cohen's building has big red notices for the meeting on the 14th, should it take place. My third point is the waterway adjacent to the North Beach apartments on the, what is it, the south side and west side of Parkview Island is now considered closed for public use. You cannot, there's a problem with the infrastructure that the city, it has been for 6 months and the city doesn't seem to be able to control. So by adding more buildings there, more residents, more tenants, are you planning on fixing that problem? Because the city has not been able to fix that problem for the last 6 months. There's still raw sewage pumping into the waterway around Parkview Island, which is directly adjacent to those apartments. I'm just saying the city has a huge infrastructure that problem that needs to be solved before any of this can proceed. And in my opinion, none of it should proceed. But thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Paula. Debbie, the next speaker.
Paula, for the record, could you state your last name your property and your address?
Sure. My name is Paula King. I live at 8011 Crespi Boulevard. I'm both a landlord, I'm a member of No Snob, and I'm also the vice president of the Biscayne Beach Neighborhood Association, which includes the Tatum Waterway.
Thank you, Paula.
Debbie, next speaker, please.
The next speaker is David McKinney.
Mr. McKinney, good morning. Do you swear under oath that any and all testimony that you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, good morning.
Thank you. You may proceed.
I'm David McKinney, and I'm a architectural historian. I live at 1020 Meridian Avenue, and I'm a private citizen. But I also bring a certain amount of expertise. I have a PhD in the history of architecture from the University of Virginia. And I wanted just to state that I've reviewed the staff posting, and I think the summary that that was given this morning more than indicates that there is a case to prepare a designation for this neighborhood. There are the aspect of Miami Beach that makes it special is not just its Art Deco or its MIMO, but its continuation of an architectural tradition. I remind you of what Denise Scott Brown said to the city when her firm was tasked to look at the architecture of Miami Beach. She said the extraordinary aspect of Miami Beach is that you can ride through the city and you can see extraordinary examples of architecture from the 1920s to the 1970s. This, their proposed architectural designation, ensures that we can there continue to preserve a very important segment of our architectural heritage, but also of our history. Thank you.
Thank you very much, David, for your insightful comments. Debbie?
We have no more new speakers. We still have Mr. Seraldo and Mr. Kasdan with their hands up. I think both of them would like to speak again.
Okay. And Nancy, you're on the board. This is public comment, not discussion. Daniel, please speak. And we're going to We have a very severe time crunch here, so please be brief, and we need to move on to consider a motion. So Daniel and Mr. Kasdan, please speak as briefly as you can. Thank you.
Mr. Seraldo, you are still under oath. Are you able to speak? Can you hear us?
Oh, okay. Yes. Hi, Daniel Seraldo. Yes. And I appreciate the time crunch. I actually had some cross-examining questions for Neeson, and I'll try to be brief, but I do believe the questions will be helpful in the deliberations. So, Neeson, you mentioned that the YTEC properties were the bane of the neighborhood, and that, quote, now when you go through the properties, you can see the client with fully occupied property and beautiful landscaping that is an enhancement to the neighborhood. You also mentioned sea level rise as a defining issue of our generation. So my first question is, during the substantial renovation of these historic properties, did your client invest in repairing the low and or damaged seawall along the extent of the property? And if you could be brief in your reply.
Okay, PJ, can we bring over Mr. Kasdan to the extent that Mr. Kasdan appeared as counsel, but to the extent that that he may respond with testimony, I'd like to swear him in.
Nick, if I may, you have put your finger on exactly the impropriety of the question. I am appearing as counsel and not testifying as an expert witness or a fact witness. if you feel that I, you know, if you want me to answer questions, I'll answer questions, but please you have put your finger on why I'm not a party to be questioned.
Okay.
Okay, maybe I could just ask my last questions and then leave it up to him or you all, but just for the consideration. So I just have three more quick ones for Neeson and his client. Do you believe that it is a responsibility of each property owner to maintain its property, including its seawall? And do you have any evidence of flooding of the structures of your property, including photographic evidence and dates of flooding, as well as estimated damages related to any flooding on your property? When this was last heard, no evidence was provided of actual structural flooding, just a lot of overtures. So I think that would be important to confirm any sworn testimony to that effect. And then lastly, Neeson mentioned that properties that the client owns across Tatum Waterway Drive are not historically designated. I want to make it clear to everyone on the board and the public listening in that those properties are indeed a part of the National Register District. Thank you. That's all.
Thank you very much, Daniel. Am I to understand, Mr. Kasdan, that you are not responding because you're the attorney? I don't understand.
If I may, okay. Unfortunately, the board has been throwing a lot of legal stuff this morning. I'm saying that cross-examination of me is not appropriate because I'm not an expert witness or a fact witness. That notwithstanding, I'm happy to answer the questions. And I think the facts speak for themselves. You drive by my client's properties, you can see the enormous investment, how beautiful those properties are. In fact, I would say he's taken such good care of the properties that people have once again recognized how fine those properties are because of the millions that he has invested. And so he has done as much or more as any other property owner in the area to protect and preserve those properties, which also underscores the silliness of the supposed threat of demolition, which is completely illusory. Mr. Chair, I don't know if now is the time. You have graciously and generously given me another opportunity to speak. There were a few closing additional comments I wanted to make.
Please, 2 minutes and that is it. We need to move on. Thank you.
Okay. First of all, as to the issue of that this is not preordained, well, the city has already advertised in October the designation hearing, which both presumes that this board will pass, direct the staff to go forward with the designation, and presumes that the city commission will as well. Therefore, it has to be assumed that this is a preordained process. Number two, we did not get the names and addresses of all the speakers at this quasi-judicial hearing. At the end, one speaker was caught and asked to provide her full name and address, but there were others who did not. We don't know who those individuals are and can't verify them. That's violative of quasi-judicial rules. Furthermore, Debbie, who I think has been over the years a very thoughtful advocate or administrator in terms of looking at this process, has offered that through certificates of appropriateness, resiliency issues can be considered. This is not the case. Something such as TDRs must be an adopted policy and legislation by the city. Cannot be done on a case-by-case basis with certificates of appropriateness. And in fact, the TDRs are one of the main ways in which properties can afford resiliency measures. So that underscores the fact that before the designation moves forward, we must equally deal with the resiliency issues. Final point, and Mr. Chair, I think you've made it yourself. We are in a time crunch, you have said. So it appears to me that if a vote is taken now, it will be without adequate deliberation, discussion, consideration of all the things that I have mentioned. And therefore, I ask that this be continued.
I did not say that we were in a time crunch to do anything about this. I said we have a time crunch till 11 o'clock where this discussion ends. That's all I said. So please don't put it in my mouth.
Mr. Chair, if I could just procedurally, one of our board members has to leave at 11. So just want to clarify that. We have at least one board member that cannot stay in the meeting past 11. We need a majority of the board members present to vote in order to instruct staff to prepare the designation report. Just wanted to put that on the record. We have one more speaker, Mr. Chair, Amalina.
Okay, good morning. Do you swear under oath that any and all testimony that you'll give in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I swear.
Okay, you may proceed.
Name and address.
Okay. Hi, my name is Amel Perkins. Address 7900 Tato Motorway Drive, apartment 309.
Thank
you. So my husband and I both own this property, and we are very, very concerned about this whole thing. So I heard a little bit of everyone speaking, and I am also nervous being part of this webinar, but what I want to express is the historical memory from people living in that area. As a resident, kids growing, people having memories of meeting their spouse or their other half. The bridge behind it that has been representing people visiting from all over the world that have memories of this area, this building, those apartments. This cannot be forgotten. Also, people that live there and their concerns of what it's going to become. It's going to be a madhouse. So I may not have the law terms or the political terms. I'm just a humble person that's concerned about her home, that's concerned about her neighbors, kids, the one downstairs, the one upstairs, Melissa and Enrico, everybody who lives in that area that are afraid of losing their home. This historical is not just a landmark in a spiritual matter and emotional matter for us. It's beyond that. And that needs to be heard. As an owner and as individual owners, as Mr. Gastine have referred, since he's so concerned about individual owners, I am one of them. And I can speak on behalf of a lot of them that are present now and didn't get a chance to talk, but agree with me.
Your 2 minutes are up.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Debbie?
I don't see any new public comment. I do see Daniel and Neeson still have their hands up. I'm not sure if that was just from the previous. I'm
closing public comment that everyone's story. I'll get you in a moment, Nancy, please.
I want that to happen.
Yes, you will, Nancy. I want the board members to make comment on what they've heard and about the motion, the redesignation. But in deference to time, I would like to put a motion on the floor so it's there. I would like to propose that we designate Waterway as an historic district, and we hopefully can vote on it before the meeting ends today. So I open the floor to discussion.
Chair, that this is not a designation hearing. So if someone were to make a motion, the question that you're being asked is, should you direct staff of the planning department to prepare a designation report to bring it back to you?
I misspoke, I'm sorry. Debbie is correct. Nancy is the first board member to speak.
Okay. And I can certainly, I can certainly make the motion, but before I do that, I just want to clarify something. I have been involved with this whole subject since the day E-Tech arrived in America, I think. I was invited to a meeting at their offices, Neeson's offices, and all I heard at that time, and that's the last conversation I have had about this problem. Never was there any discussion except we do not want to be designated. And prior to the lawsuit, all of this was happening, the only comments that I received from the owner of E-Tech was that his buildings were falling into the water. There was flooding underneath. It was a whole horrible discussion about why he did not want to be designated. This wasn't a historic district, according to him, on and on. Now, when Neeson called me, and the only question I asked him, because he went on and on about the TDRs, I have never heard about TDRs in relationship to that discussion long ago or when we were discussing it at the commission meeting when everybody voted in favor of the designation of the waterway. Even people who were questioning it, everybody supported it. So now all of a sudden comes out of the air the story now about TDRs. One question I asked Neeson when he called me was, what are you talking about TDRs? You need another floor? What do you need? And I, by the way, went to see the buildings that E-Tech did do. And I think that was a prelude to what they're after now, which sounds like TDRs. So I asked Neeson, so tell me, what kind of TDRs? What are we talking about? I mean, he could have taken all the buildings and added into another tower we could have had. So I want to hear from Neeson, but you're pushing the end of the meeting. I wanted to put that on record just so we understand what we're facing.
Thank you, Nancy, very much.
And I just want to reiterate, you know, the board, the board is free to take as much time as it needs. I understand we may lose a board member at 11, but nobody, I don't want anyone to think that you're being rushed.
Thank you.
I thought we had to end our discussion at 11 because the time expires at 11. Is that not correct?
As I understand it, it's that a board member needs to leave at 11.
Oh, okay.
If I'm not the one designated to leave, I will be leaving at 11.
Okay. Barry, you want to comment?
This whole thing has been a bit frustrating for me, maybe because I'm on a time constraint, but I feel a bit offended by the first more than 50% of this meeting being designated banter between attorneys about minutia and whether we have been instructed on who to speak to and ex parte information, conversations. We had that when we signed up as board members and were given that information in writing. So don't tell me I need to have that every single time I come to a hearing. I'm very offended by that. Additionally, I feel again by a developer, it's kind of my way or the highway. You better give me this we're going to create a win-win, of course, only if you give me everything I need. And I don't see the problem with this redesignation. If you're so willing to be the good Samaritans, the good keepers of the land, then do the right thing. And let's re-protect this now and move on. I'm in favor of your motion. And that's it. I don't need to belabor this.
Thank you very much, Barry. Kirk?
Morning. Just a couple of quick comments. I agree with what Barry said. I mean, we all are very aware of what our responsibilities and proper protocols are as board members in that regard. But I want to point to, there's a lot of great testimony. And first of all, starting with the staff report, which was really nicely put together, I thought, references history going back all the way to, I believe Debbie said November 18, 2009 for the National Register designation of this area. Moving forward, the staff report referenced the master plan. And Mr. Cohen as well referenced, I think he in his testimony mentioned 5 years of property owners engaging in the dialogue. Mr. Cohen also referred to the Shulman study. And Mr. Kastner referred to the threat of demolition. And as I see it, in matters of zoning, I would say broadly stated, as a Historic Preservation Board member, it's always my interest to advocate for the well-being of all of our historic districts. And same goes with resiliency and the question of Alan Shulman's study. Yes, I mean, there were a lot of recommendations there, and I believe this board supported moving forward to try to implement those. As I understand it, what is before us right now is the suitability of this district to move forward in the designation process. I don't see it as being my question to answer whether there is an imminent threat to demolish those buildings, nor do I see that. You know, I don't know where anyone can make that claim, nor do I believe it's relevant. To me, the relevance is a suitability of the designation. Going back to some additional testimony, TDRs, those are larger questions. And going back to the Shulman study, you know, when you talk about TDRs, as I understand it, there's a question of the sending district and the receiving district. And as I see it, again, those are not questions for the board to be answering at this time. Mr. Kasdan, I believe it was, referred to accessory use. And again, you know, that was mentioned as part of the Shulman study. And as a board member, you know, if there are opportunities to contribute to the well-being of our historic districts as a city, I believe this board, and I believe I personally am in favor of having those discussions, but I do not see where this is a time and the place for those discussions to take place, nor do I understand that this board has jurisdiction of a zoning issue such as transfer of development rights, or a zoning issue such as the use of particular buildings and changing the use. Those are for the commission to answer. And as far as a presentation goes, I think staff did a great job. You know, from everything I've seen and heard, I think this area has a lot to be proud of in terms of a historic district above and beyond the National Register designation, and I'm fully supportive in that regard.
Thank you, Kirk. Max?
Yes. Building from that, I think, so for the narrower question that's before us today is looking at the, you know, whether the district or the proposed district meets the criteria for designation moving forward with that. I think the staff analysis solves that question. I don't want us to get tunnel vision necessarily about the wider point, but I think the way Kirk just spoke kind of describes my thinking on it, that's not necessarily the question before us. But if there's room in the motion that we make, if we could provide some additional guidance as the board for planning to consider the applicability of the strategies in the Shulman report, whether those would be appropriate for the Tatum Waterway expansion area, whether the transferable development rights are the best incentive, or if there are other incentive opportunities that are available to be considered for this district. And seawalls came up in the public comment. I would also encourage consideration of you know, what kind of coherence that has with the blue-green strategy, whether it's seawalls in combination with other living shoreline opportunities within the district as well. to be able to promote historic preservation and the resilience. Thank you
very much, Max. I think that is everybody except me. Rick is not here.
I didn't speak, Jack. Yeah, I don't know if all the board members that are here today were here when we originally did this, but I know it was some time ago. But the way I see it, nothing has changed as far as the criteria as to whether or not it meets the criteria. And this, I believe, passed unanimously last time. So, I think the only reason we're here today is because of a, call it a legal technicality. So I'm in favor of asking the city to go ahead and move forward with a designation report.
Thank you. Thank you, Scott.
You want it second?
Yeah. Do you want to move it, Nancy?
Well, no, Scott moved it.
You're seconding. Okay. Debbie, are we prepared to take a vote on that?
I'd like Debbie to frame the motion.
So Scott, you made a motion. I forget what your exact words were. I think you said
move forward with a designation report.
So you are directing the planning department to prepare a designation report to be brought back to you at a separate meeting.
Yes.
And correct. Okay.
That's my motion.
Okay. Nancy, did you make the second? I didn't hear.
I seconded his motion, yes.
Okay. So we do have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion, Mr. Chair?
No. Hearing none. Let Barry... Max?
Just for any of the direction that we could give in the motion for... given that the new thing about hearing this now is that the Shulman report, I think, is out there, if we can direct,
The Shulman report, it has not been adopted by the City Commission yet. I believe it's scheduled at their October meeting. I think it's completely appropriate. I would put it as a separate motion to make a recommendation to the Mayor and City Commission that the Planning Department be directed to study if the concepts in the Shulman report could potentially be applied to this area at a later time. And I think I would want them separate for now. But I think it's completely appropriate as a recommending body to ask the commission to have the planning department start looking at that.
Okay, there's a motion.
So in that event, Debbie, in that event, why don't you could call the roll on the first motion, and then once the first motion has been voted on, maybe Max has a second motion he'd like to make, transmitting certain recommendations to the City Commission.
Very good. So for the question made by Mr. Needleman, should the board direct staff of the Planning Department to prepare the historic designation report for the Tatum Waterway expansion area? Mr. Pascal?
Yes.
Mr. Needleman?
Yes.
Mr. Litt?
Yes.
Ms. Liebman?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Mr. Klein, you're on mute.
Thank you.
Sorry, yes.
Thank you.
Okay, and Mr. Finglass?
Yes.
Mr. Lopez is absent. That motion passes.
Okay,
Max, did you want to make a separate motion for a recommendation to the Mayor and City Commission?
Yes, a motion recommending that the planning incorporate in the designation report the analysis on applicability of the strategies in the draft Buoyant Cities report to the North Shore District, and what types of incentives, including transferable development rights, but other strategies that may be appropriate.
Can you state that one more time?
I don't know if I can say it the same way twice. The gist is, given that this is open again, if we could incorporate the most recent resilience analysis for historic districts and the applicability of those strategies to address the resilience concerns.
And wait, You left out the report.
In the Draft Buoyant Cities report.
Can I interject?
Sure.
Max, I just in having heard the Shulman report, my only hesitation is, you know, my understanding with the Shulman report, there are a lot of different strategies in terms of renovation, building strategies, streetscapes, uses were certainly touched on. I'm concerned with making TDRs too much of a key statement because I did not necessarily feel in the Shulman report that that was the takeaway. I think broadly we should look at the Shulman report, and that's just my feeling. I'm concerned if we put in our recommendation TDRs, I'm not sure that we've had enough discussion about TDRs and how they would work.
I agree with that.
Max,
I am not so sure that it matters, but to put it in because it has to do with this area, we can say no the day that we're there having a real discussion about it, but not to just leave it out, I think is a mistake.
To leave out TDRs, Nancy, you're referring to?
You're referring to not putting in our motion the TDRs, but we have to deal with that issue. It's one of the issues. We do not have to support it.
I think Nancy, the first motion was adopted, and right. and the first motion was that, you know, that there was a prima facie case and to direct staff to prepare the formal designation report. This is a separate advisory recommendation that Max has proposed, making certain recommendations to the city commission.
Well, so you're saying if we put the TDRs in there, that we're sending it off to the commission with that? This is a discussion. It's only a discussion. I don't care if we don't have any TDRs, but since it seems to be one of the overriding new issues that have arrived in the past week that I can see, I think we need to deal with it and decide what to do. But if you don't do it, we're going to sit here again and have another meeting like this all about anything.
Can I jump in? I want to jump in. Kirk, I like Kirk's idea, and Max, maybe I could phrase it a certain way. Because if we, like he was saying in the Shulman report, there are many, many ideas thrown out there. So I don't want to, in our recommendation, pick one or two or three and say maybe we should incorporate these. Well, we should direct the city to incorporate or look for ways to incorporate any aspects of the Shulman report that they feel work for the area. Something in that, in, you know, phrasing it that way somehow, so we're not kind of picking one, two, or three different things and
I agree
and
with
pushing
you,
those things.
I don't care what we do. I just think that looking at why we're here now, that came up. Are we going to just forget about what we've discussed here and just move on like nothing else is happening? Or do we want to have to deal with all of the issues that have been brought up here for this meeting?
I believe that's what's happening. You're taking the report in its broad sense and everything that may be in the report that may relate to this area. Your answer, I believe, is yes, it's included.
Oh, as long as you feel that way and the board feels that way. I would just not like to think that we've sat here for another 15 hours and nothing happens.
I agree.
Yeah, if we're comfortable with that the TDRs would be included as one among many in the suite
one of
incentives,
I just things.
What it, yeah, I just want to make sure that it doesn't get left out. And then because it's something that seems to be of particular interest in this district, that if it's not considered in the report, to Nancy's point, I think we could end up spinning a little bit more. But if we're confident that it will be considered among all the others, then I'm fine with the advisory motion without it.
If they're all happy that it's going to be in there, I haven't heard everybody, but that it's just one more issue that we're going to have to deal with.
I think we were brought here for one purpose, apparently, today, and we have taken care of that purpose. I think
we did.
What did
we take care of?
About the
motion to
prepare a designation report. That was the purpose of the meeting.
And my motion was just additional direction for planning for that.
Okay, I see no problem with that as long as
we'll see. Things
aren't specified.
So we have a motion by Mr. Litt. Was the in that is to recommend that the city commission direct the planning department to incorporate any aspects of the Shulman report that may be applicable for the area within the Tatum Waterway expansion, the proposed Tatum Waterway expansion. Do you want me to add anything else to that motion? The Shulman report, the Buoyant Cities, does include mention of TDR. Obviously, it includes hundreds of other things.
Then it's fine.
To put a finer point on, I would say coherence with the city's blue-green infrastructure planning as well.
And coherence with the city's blue-green infrastructure planning. Okay.
In the motion, can we call a vote?
Okay, we have a second. Mr. Pascal?
Yes.
Mr. Needleman?
Yes.
Ms. Liebman?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mr. Litt?
Yes.
Did I get everyone?
No, me.
Mr. Finglass, yes. Chair Finglass. Okay, so that motion passes. We will prepare an LTC and make that recommendation to the City Commission on your behalf. Okay, thank you, board members. We have no further business today, so we can hear a motion to adjourn.
I'll move it.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Meeting adjourned. I will see all of you in October.
Thank you all. Have a good week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.